Are you thankful for the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc.? Please consider making a special Thanksgiving gift. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues, etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. With 6 weeks left in 2016, we're approximately $120,000 short of expenses. Thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I guess I would call myself a sports fan. It's very narrow-focused sports fan. It has very little to do with sports in general, but a lot to do with one sport, baseball. And purely as an observer, I have no skill whatsoever in actually playing that sport. Maybe it's why I appreciate those who do. And I grew up playing sports. I was never great, but I participated. Of course, when I grew up, it was, I think it's fair to say, at least in my little corner of the world down there in Dallas, Texas, unheard of. And I mean, at the time, completely unheard of to have kids' sports, youth sports taking place, not even a practice on Sunday, much less a Sunday morning. Of course, maybe that was just growing up in the Bible Belt. It's certainly not true today. What if it is a choice between your kids or your grandkids' practice or game or tournament and church on Sunday morning? Joining us to talk about sports as idolatry, Pastor Hans Feeney, pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire. He's also a senior contributor to The Federalist. Hans, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Is it wrong to love sports or to love playing sports like so many of these kids do?
No, of course not. Sports are a wonderful activity, wonderful disciplines. There are great benefits of them. They provide you physical fitness and give you skills like teamwork and self-discipline and kind of things of this nature, and a great way to make friends and to not die of heart disease at, you know, 40 years old or whatever it is. So they offer all kinds of benefits to us.
So you talk about kind of, it's not just a matter of priority, it's a matter of, as you say, what you love the most. You can love two things, but if you're required to choose between the two, the one you choose is the one you love the most. How does that apply to the situation we're talking about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this is a test that we would normally have no issue applying in other realms of life. There's something sort of odd about the third commandment that we always, for some reason, it tests that would be really good diagnostics for dealing with the other commandments. All of a sudden, we don't want to let that test work as well for the third commandment. So if you were to say, if you're looking at, say, this the sixth commandment, and you were to say, all right, well, if there's two women and a guy's got a co-worker that he is called by Christ to love as a neighbor, and then he has his wife, who he's called to love as his spouse, as the one flesh union that God has given to him. And you'd say, well, he can certainly love both of those women in those respective ways, but the reality is, if he is choosing to spend more time with his co-worker than he is with his wife, then folks would look at the situation and they'd say, well, this is no good, this is wrong, you got to stop doing this. And if the guy said, well, you don't understand, I still love my wife, people would say to him, well, yeah, but because you're choosing the affections of this other woman, you obviously love her more. And so when we kind of apply that test to hearing the Word of God, to loving and cherishing the Word of God, it should work the same way, where I think a lot of times where people feel like they're kind of being cornered on this, or I'm not exactly sure what's always going through their minds, but if people get the impression that you're trying to tell them that they don't like coming to church, if they're taking their kids to sporting events or tournaments or whatever it is, various activities on Sunday morning. And they look at things and they go, well, that can't possibly be true. I love going to church. I love, you know, hearing the sermons and I love singing the hymns and all that stuff. But the simple reality of the thing is, well, if there's a conflict between two things, if there's a conflict between thing A, which is church, and thing B, which is sports, and you're repeatedly choosing thing B, well, that just reveals the condition of the heart, that whatever it is that sports gives you is more important to you than what church gives you.
Maybe it isn't, and someone might say, it's not so much the sports, Pastor. It's that it's my kids. It's that it's my grandkids. You know, I love them. What do you say?
With regard to the idea that this is what the kids are wanting to do,
little Jimmy, he's a pretty good soccer player, and they got this league, and they got to travel on Sunday mornings to do their tournaments. And look, I love my child. I want my child to have this positive experience, and I do love church too. But it's really not so much my love for sports as much as my love for my child or my grandchild. What's your response?
Yeah, I think my response would be I've been on a kick about this for a while, that one of the most important pastoral care things to say to people in moments like this is you're not special. Things are going to go for you the same way that they go for everyone else. And so if you love your child, then you want to give your child the thing that's the most important, which is the Word of God. And if your kids grow up seeing that when there's a conflict between the Word of God and something else, that you are actively choosing something else over the Word of God, they're going to learn what it is that people learn when they see those things. They're going to learn that one of those two things is more important and that they should take more seriously, and that the more important thing is not hearing the Word of God. So you can sit there and kind of, people will oftentimes justify this by saying, oh, look, you know, we have very strong faith in our household and God is very important to us, and don't worry, little Jimmy here has very strong faith. But the reality is that Jimmy's not special. His faith isn't so special that he doesn't need the Word of God in order to strengthen it and give life to it. And if he doesn't have that, his faith is going to die, just like it does for everybody else.
You have said this, whatever beneficial lessons sports offer, and they do offer lots of beneficial lessons, you say they're nullified when children learn in a way that, well, I must be the most important person in the universe since the entire family's schedule revolves around me and my sports activities. What are you trying to say there?
Well, yeah, I think that obviously there are great things that kids learn from sports. You know, they learn teamwork and dedication and things of this nature, and focus and concentration. But the reality is there are also lots of really bad things that come from it. I think a great example of this would be Tiger Woods, who is, you know, a golf phenom, but by the time he was 2 years old, when he was 2 years old, he's on television, you know, whacking golf balls across a studio. And so Tiger Woods had learned some tremendous skills from being so devoted to golf. He obviously learned immense skills with regard to self-discipline and focus and things of this nature. But I'd imagine that Tiger Woods also learned from a very early age that he was the most important person in the universe, because the whole family's life revolved around him pursuing his golf career and him pursuing this goal that consumed a huge amount of his time. And I don't think it's coincidental that his sort of public fall with his very sort of public serial adultery, I don't think that's coincidental. I think that's the type of thing that comes about when people grow up in an environment where they are effectively taught that you matter more than everything else, and your goals and the things you want to accomplish and the things you want to do are more important than everything else that the family has going on. And so I think the reality is that there are great lessons to be learn from sports, but as I say, when you teach them in such a way that where kids are learning a bunch of other really bad stuff, it ends up really not working out in your favor.
Okay, in your kind of you are not special and neither are your kids pastoral approach,
right.
Let's talk about this one, and it has to do with, look, there's a prospect here. The kid is good. The coaches are telling us he's really good. He's being sought out by other teams and by clubs and things like that. And look, if we cultivate this, Pastor, you understand there could really be a huge payoff for us. We got to send this kid to school someday. And we might be working toward, this is an investment in his future. We're working toward paying off his college, maybe even a scholarship. What would you say in response?
Well, again, I think the numbers of this in the article that I was referring to, and I'll have an article in the Federalist that should be, I think, coming out tomorrow on this, is an article called The Myth of the Sports Scholarship by Brad Wolverton at Chronicle.com. So the Chronicle of Higher Education is the full name of the publication. And he, at a certain point in the article, just breaks down the statistics of this. Only 2% of high school athletes get a college scholarship, and most of those 2% only get very partial scholarships. So very, very few athletes will get actual full rides. So the reality is there's only so much you can invest in this before you've already invested more than the scholarship itself is going to be worth. It's a bit like when I was a kid and I was at the Greek festival in Norwalk, Connecticut one summer, and I had a paper route, so I had all this walking around money because of my lucrative paper route business, and I just wasted it all trying to win some stupid prize. I think it was like a Ren and Stimpy framed picture at some like air rifle game or something of that nature, where you just all of a sudden there's this thing and you go, I want that, and then you completely lose control of yourself and you lose sense of what the ratio of the investment to the payoff actually is. So I think first off, you got to just look at folks and just say, well, the reality is your kid's probably not going to get a scholarship. He's probably not good enough, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just the simple reality that you can't, your love for your child is not going to make him better at sports, is not going to make him faster or stronger than, the other kids who are competing for this stuff. And then the other thing is, even if he's one of the small percentage of kids that does get something, it's not going to be enough. So this is just kind of a foolish investment. But even on top of that, I think oftentimes the thing we need to sort of look at this is just the end goal. And so just to sort of say to parents, all right, well, let's just imagine that everything goes exactly according to plan. Let's imagine that having your kid, he needs to miss church left and right because he's at tournaments and events and things of this nature, and he's sports in all the way to NCAA glory. So let's say that all goes according to plan, and he gets a full-ride scholarship, and the scholarship goes great, and he has a great collegiate career, and he goes on to be a professional athlete. Well, then what? I mean, one day he's going to die, and he's going to have to stand before God on the day of judgment, and his batting average isn't going to do him any good. The only thing that will do him any good is whether he is covered in the blood of Christ through faith. And if the way he accomplished his goal of a professional career was that he had to sacrifice hearing the word in order to get it, then it's not worth it. All of the money, all of the fame, all of the glory in this world, everyone in the world thinking you're the greatest person in the world, doesn't amount to a hill of beans if Christ himself doesn't call you righteous because you've been covered in his blood through faith.
Isn't that precisely what Christ warns against when he says, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his soul?
Yes, and this is, again, going back to my mantra of you're not special, that this is kind of the whole point, is that people have this marvelous tendency when they have wounded consciences to always look at a passage of the Bible that speaks directly to what it is that they're going through and go, well, my situation is different. And you go, well, how is it different? Like, well, it's different because I don't want to stop doing it. I don't want to give up this goal. And so, yeah, that is precisely the point. So it's not just that this pursuit of that this sacrificing church attendance and financial stability and family peace, it's not that doing all that stuff is bad because it's not likely to result in what you want. But it's that even if you get what you want, it won't do you any good if you have to actually give up the gospel in order to get it.
You write this: if you want to keep yourself safe from this temptation, that is this temptation we've been talking about, to kind of revolve your life around the kids' sports, even to the point of neglecting the Word of God or even despising the Word of God, I think in some cases. You want to keep yourself from this temptation, there's one really, really easy way to do it. Have a bunch of kids. What are you talking about?
Well, this is fairly easy to see if you know families of varying sizes. So if you have friends who've got, four, five, six kids, whatever it is, and you just ask them how many of your kids are in organized sports, and they may say, well, we got a couple, who are doing this over at the rec center, or who are doing this at a church program or something of that nature. But these kind of, these really laborious, rigorous, volleyball or baseball or, traveled football programs, things of this nature, they're not, you just can't do that if you've got more than a couple of kids. If you can't balance the schedules, you're not going to be able to afford it. And this is really one of the great things about having children. I think I have to give credit to my uncle Rolf Preuss for making this point. I don't think this idea is original to me by any stretch of the imagination. But children are great at smashing your idols. So if you buy a new car and you think it's the greatest thing in the world, and you're obsessed with it, and your kid, scratches it all up with a stick that he found on the side of the road, and you get mad and you get upset, but in the end, it's a good thing. Because what you see in all of this is it's just a thing. It's going to rust and rot and perish, and it won't do you any good on the last day. But you will be able to live with that child forever in the kingdom of heaven when you're covered in the Word. And so children have a remarkable ability by forcing you to redirect your funds towards feeding them and clothing them and caring for them and giving them what's important. They have a wonderful way of just sort of saying to you, of keeping you from temptation by just sort of taking all of the money that you were going to dedicate towards your idols and saying, no, you have to actually use it for something that in the end is much more beneficial. So yeah, I think in the end, I think this is one of the reasons we didn't see this happening earlier in our culture. One of the reasons we didn't see the culture kind of call our bluff and go, we bet you'll come on Sunday morning if we have scheduled games then, was because there just simply weren't, when people had larger families, there weren't that many people that would actually be able to give the kind of time and financial investment in order to make programs like this work.
Is this, with only about a minute here, is this just simply a problem that the average congregation and pastor like yourself is going to have to deal with continually throughout your ministry together?
Yeah, it's not going to get any easier. And I think the reality is the churches oftentimes will kind of try to placate the culture a little bit and try the path of appeasement and saying, well, you know, we've got a midweek service here or a Saturday night service there, or things of that nature. But the reality is offering people alternatives. When the church basically says, oh, don't worry, we'll offer you something else so we can get out of your way and you can go do your favorite thing, but please let us be your second favorite thing. This is not a recipe for success in recatechizing Christians to understand the importance of the means of grace. So I think we're reaching a point where as congregations and as pastors and as Christians, we're just going to simply have to draw a line in the sand and say, look, this isn't, no one's forcing you to sign up for these things. This is not an accident of just living in this sinful world. It's not like having mean thoughts jump into your brain when someone cuts you off in traffic. You got to voluntarily sign up for this stuff to pull your kids away from the gospel. So you just simply have to stop doing this for the sake of yourself and for the sake of your own children.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and senior contributor to The Federalist. We'll post a link to his forthcoming column on sports as idolatry under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about some alleged evidence of Hebrew as the oldest alphabet with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Stay tuned.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the CLCC.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a confessional Lutheran. The CLCC.org.
Does the gospel free you to do what you want? I've written an article in the latest issues, etc. journal titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer's spiritual journey from Roman Catholicism and American Evangelicalism to Confessional Lutheranism, the free online Issues, Etc. journal.